Put down your blasters and prepare for the Jedi to end. This is the Imperial Senate Podcast, episode 23. With me, I have the host of the show, Charlie. He's letting me co-host. And we have a new member. Please welcome Claire.
Woo! Oh, hey.
How's it going?
Not too shabby, I must say. Thanks for having me. I'm so excited.
I'm so excited that you are with us. I'm really glad to have another female with me to talk about our love of Star Wars. Charlie, how does it feel to be outnumbered?
It's disturbing. It's obviously a sign of Lucasfilm in this current age. You typical SJWs are taking over my podcast, right?
Typical SJWs. Nikki can't be with us right now. He's really sick. So don't hang around him. He will cough on you. And it will start the zombie apocalypse. So send him good vibes, but stay away from him.
Please do. Like, you don't want to get ill from Nikki. Like, just cough over the microphone. It'll go into your ears and...
Get a computer virus? I'm sorry, that was really bad. Not a good first impression, guys. I'm so sorry.
Icky Nikki, let me tell you.
We love you though, really.
Get Miss better. You.
Yeah, get better. So we were going to talk about Star Wars Rebels, the last two episodes for the series finale, but also there was this huge news that was announced today that kind of shook everything up in the Star Wars community. Jon Favreau was announced to be the executive producer for the Star Wars live series that's coming to Disney's direct-to-consumer platform. So, of course, yay, more Star Wars, but here we are with another announcement of a white director coming in to give a voice to a lot of diversity for Star Wars. So, split down the middle. A lot of people are okay with it. Other people are not so much okay with it. In the statement, Favreau has been tipped to work with a diverse group of writers and directors and give Lucasfilm the opportunity to build a robust talent base. So that was pretty hopeful. Claire, what are your thoughts on the live action series and Favreau's hiring?
Well, I really enjoy Jon Favreau. I think he's a great director, great writer, funny guy. But yeah, I'm a little disappointed. I wish that we had some ladies or some other people of color coming in, a little more diversity in the Star Wars fan base. Also, happy International Women's Day when we're recording this. I thought that was an interesting announcement. I was like, oh, another dude. Okay, it's a dude I like, but, you know... I'm still waiting for that announcement that's going to open some new eyes for Star Wars.
Yeah, absolutely. What do you think, Charlie?
I'm just glad that there's finally someone like me directing producing a Star Wars film. Like, finally after all these years. No, yeah, I was kind of, you know, like, he's not directing it, but he's still, like, executive producing a TV show is a pretty big deal. And, you know, it's another middle-aged white dude. It just seems a bit disingenuous, like the whole thing today. I understand that there was a Disney sort of shareholders meeting today, which is why the news came out. Still, the PR move is it's a pretty weird thing to do. Considering, like, you know, every time we get an announcement, there's the same reaction, which is, okay, but we could do better. So, yeah. I do like Jon Favreau, though. I mean, he made Elf, so you can't argue there.
Yeah, that's true. I see both sides of it. I like Jon Favreau. He directed Iron Man. He did The Jungle Book. I think he's helping out with the Lion King movie. And he's already been a part of the Star Wars universe. So there's, you know, there's an idea of, oh, he knows what he's doing. Kathleen Kennedy knows what she's doing. I'm on board with it. I trust her. But at the same time, I totally understand that we do lack diversity when it comes to directors, producers, and writers for Star Wars movies, and now a live Star Wars series. So I'll be curious to see what that mission statement is that came from Lucasfilm about having Jon Favreau help create a diverse group of writers and directors. So I'll be curious about what will come of that. As far as what to expect in the series itself, have you guys been thinking or mulling over what the series could possibly be about?
Oh, God. I have so many things to ponder right now. So many new things have been announced that I have no idea. And that's kind of exciting. I don't even know where to begin. Hopefully it doesn't end with him getting decapitated by a Darksaber this time. But that's all I got. I'm just excited for whatever it's going to be.
Yeah, it still kind of feels unreal to the extent, because I remember being 9 years old, moving to a new place in the UK. And one of the first things I saw online was this whole sort of concept of the future of Star Wars, because episode three had just come out that year, and it was definitely it was the Clone Wars Yoda, because they're going to make a new Clone Wars series, which was freaking me out because I loved the old one, and then there was a potential live series that would come out very soon. I believe it was like 2009. Which was the future back then, and it never happened. And I guess it just feels like, you know, it was a cool thing that could have happened, but I just never assumed we're going to see it. So the idea that we're getting news about it now is just pretty cool. I still don't know what it could be about. I've already said, like, my own personal choice would be about Dr. Aphra, because I think it's the perfect blend of using different eras. You could have like Clone War stuff and Galactic Civil War stuff, use the different props and all the films, and, you know, tell a good story. But I don't know, anything, to be honest, like, it's new ground, and I think that's a good place to start.
I'm pretty okay with the idea of not really knowing what the series is going to be about. I personally don't want it to be about the Old Republic, just because I feel like a lot of people keep on crying for it to happen. And as much as I love the Old Republic, as much as I enjoyed playing Star Wars Knights of the Old Republic, and as much as I loved Revan, I feel like if we were to get a series about it, I think it would just be beating a dead horse. So I'm all for doing something completely brand new, you know, maybe something that doesn't really focus on the Jedi itself. I would be perfectly okay with that. But as far as, like, I guess the Old Republic, if it went that direction, I would be really curious to see how they would introduce it in a way to where it doesn't have a lot of parallels with, the RPG online game and the two video games.
I must say, I don't envy his job right now, because the idea to me of doing a live action Star Wars show, continuous ongoing show, is just so daunting to me. When you have like the Marvel TV shows and stuff, normally it's set in a real world setting. There's not all these elaborate sets. There's not all these elaborate costumes, except, of course, you know, your superhero's costume. But there's going to be a lot going into this show, and I am very curious to see just how ambitious they are in where they place it and what they want to do with it. I don't envy that right now. Thank goodness for a Disney budget, right?
Yeah, true. It'd be kind of cool if they made something like a little bit darker, maybe even darker than Rogue One. You know, with the Marvel movies, they're sort of, you know, lighthearted, and there's a lot of serious stuff going on, but there's still that comedic effect. But with, like, the Marvel shows on Netflix, You know, you have Daredevil and Jessica Jones that really blur the line between, you know, something that's very dark and very serious as compared to Star Wars in general. So I feel like with a live series, you get a little bit more freedom of what you can get away with versus, you know, a Star Wars film where there's some, you know, there's something being expected of it. And, you know, with the Star Wars cartoon series, you still had that responsibility of making sure that the audience that it was geared towards don't have nightmares, I guess. I don't know.
Yeah, I think as well, like, obviously this is for the brand new Disney streaming app as well, so there must be extra pressure for that, for it to be a hit. Which, again, like when we were talking about who to hire, I understand why they brought in someone who has experience with, like, you know, helming big projects. And, you know, like, with, like, sort of the Marvel stuff and the Jungle Book, you know, why Disney sort of trusts Jon Favreau. But I feel like the whole TV project itself is a good sort of breeding place for, like, female directors to come in and sort of prove that. Because obviously, this is whole concept of, like, we need people with experience. And the way Hollywood works is that most people with experience are, like, white men. And I feel like the TV show is a good way of actually proving that notion wrong and saying, look at these women. They've directed really cool style stuff. You should give them a feature film. Jessica, you just mentioned Jessica Jones. That came out today. And every episode is directed by a woman. And they're all from different sort of backgrounds. Like, there's women of color as well. And I feel like that's where we should be heading. And I've watched two of the episodes so far, and they're so beautifully directed that you'd be a fool to not sort of tap into that market.
Yeah. I really hope that, you know, I'm always going to be in the corner of Kathleen Kennedy. I trust her. I think she's doing a lot of good work with what she has. And I'm very hopeful that, you know, her and the rest of the team are listening to a lot of the fans. I know J.J. Abrams was really pushing on diversity and having a diverse group of people to work with him. So I'm curious to see how that's going to follow through. And, you know, I'm very hopeful that Jon Favreau, as he's being an executive producer throughout all of this, that he'll keep that in the back of his mind, and he'll be willing to listen and to give other people a voice, and let, you know, a woman of color or a person of color in general be able to tell stories, and provide a voice and character to Star Wars characters.
And there's a good chance for a Scarlett Johansson cameo, because she's in just about everything he does. So ScarJo and Star Wars, that. I would take it.
True that.
Yes, I would take that too. She's my baby. She's the OG. Mm.
But who would she play?
Literally anyone, everyone. Oh, I'll cast her in every
that's
role.
That's such a good question. I would want her to be like, I don't know, like this really strong, independent, badass woman who's just kicking ass and taking names. Like, she doesn't necessarily work for the Republic, but she doesn't work for the Empire or the Dark Side. Maybe she's a bounty hunter. Maybe she isn't. I don't know. So many ideas. I'll write a fan fiction about her.
Please. Please.
What if she's Dex's daughter?
You know, I'd be okay with that.
You know, Dex the Jester, he passes away, but in his will, he leaves everything to his only daughter. And she has to, like, because, you know, if you read the books, you know that his whole restaurant shut down in Coruscant. So maybe after episode 6, she starts up again. And, like, business is booming because freedom gives you the hungries.
Okay.
And, you know.
Please Photoshop Scarlett Johansson with Dex's diner for the cover of this.
Like, ScarJo with four hands.
Please. Earlier this week, you guys did a live podcast for people to call in and sort of talk about the Rebels finale. Unfortunately, I wasn't able to be a part of that. But with the Rebel finale, when you were doing this, did anything stick out to you as far as like the experience goes with the finale, with other people's experience with the series finale? Did anything stick out to you with that?
Well, Claire cried throughout the whole thing, apparently.
Okay. All right. Now, when I cry at something, I mentioned this on the live podcast, it's not that surprising. I will cry at, like, everything, especially Star Wars. I still cry during the original trilogy, which is...
Same.
Which is, yeah.
Yeah.
I will never go numb to that. But, yeah, this was... This series finale was just a puddle of disgusting, phlegmy tears and tissues for me. And, of course, I still don't have words. It was a super emotional experience, way more so than I could have ever expected, and just satisfying. That is the one word that I just keep coming back to. It was just a satisfying finale, a satisfying end to these characters. Well, or is it, I guess? Oh, my God.
Or is it?
Dun, dun, dun.
Charlie, what were your thoughts? Wait. Oh, you're asking me. Oh, no.
Yeah, I was going to ask you because we never actually got to hear your thoughts about the finale.
So I'm going to start off with something positive. I really liked... Ooh. I know, I'm about to spill the tea. I really liked how Star Wars Rebels brought together a lot of people within the Star Wars community. There are a plethora of people who are ride or die Rebels fans and who have grown to love Star Wars as a result. And I love that. And I'm so glad that that's happened. Like, I remember Star Wars Celebration in Orlando, like a lot of Star Wars Rebels cosplay. There were a lot of people repping, you know, Ezra Bridger and Harrison Dula and Kanan and Ahsoka. They had that Ahsoka Lives Day where everybody dressed up as Ahsoka Tano and just really talked about their experience with Star Wars Rebels and how much it has meant to them. And you have a lot of parents that watched it with their kids and was able to introduce the Star Wars series and the Star Wars movies to their kids through Star Wars Rebels. I absolutely love that and I adore that. Now for my take. I don't know.
I hate it.
I'm on the fence about it. I'm still digesting it. It's a cute series. It has a lot of it pays a lot of homage to what Star Wars is about. And Star Wars is about hope. It's about facing trying times, and even with the odds are stacked against you, you can still come through. Like, you can still fight and you can still persevere. So there was a lot of that. And Dave Filoni is a good storyteller. There are things that I disagree with that he used, and how the Star Wars Rebels series sort of turned in the direction that it went. There are things that I disagree with, but at the end of the day, I do think that Dave Filoni is an incredible storyteller. And whether you don't like the show or whether you do like it, there is still some sort of attachment that you do form with the characters. So I liked some aspects of it. I really love Hera. She's one of my favorites. Jason kind of came out of nowhere. There was really no,
we know where he came from.
Surprise!
Chicka-wow-wow. I mean, I'm all for that, but there was and this is me complaining just to complain. It doesn't matter when Jason was conceived. That doesn't really matter to the story, but seeing him sort of in the like epilogue of everything, just kind of thrown in there. Like, it took me a minute. I did like the surprised white guy gif for just like the blinking. it took me a minute to process that, like, okay, he's all of a sudden here. How old is he? What's this about? So it gave me a lot of questions. And
how are babies
made? If you were to look into my Google history that night, that would be there. How does sex work?
How do Twi'leks get jiggy?
I'm so curious. Fan fiction didn't help. Anyway, so that was sort of interesting to me. I was really confused about the way in which, you know, Ezra left, and how after the events of the original trilogy, Ahsoka popped up and was like, hey, let's go find Ezra. So that was kind of confusing to me, but I do appreciate sort of the open-endedness, and like the ambiguous ending. That way it can have an opportunity to turn into something else, or it won't have an opportunity to turn into something else. In the last podcast we did before the live one, I was sort of talking about how I didn't like that Star Wars Rebels started to turn into a story about the Jedi again, with like Kanan and Ezra and Lothal. I really wanted it just to be about the rebellion forming, and like the fledgling rebellion forming into a strong one that sort of gets ready for its first victory against the Empire. And by the time it hit season 4, I just felt like I was watching a story about Ezra and Kanan, and not really watching a story about Hera's struggles or, you know, background rebellion characters. So that for me was kind of disappointing, but at the same time, I liked the character development with Kanan and Ezra. I don't know, maybe if it was like a different Star Wars series. Also, my sweet baby Blue, Thrawn, I don't know where he is. I don't know if he's cold or hungry or if he needs a hug.
Either way, you and I will supply one for him.
Oh, yes, we will. Girl, we will. Ooh, you hear that, Lars Mikkelsen? We got you.
We're coming for you.
I really wanted more Thrawn. I don't think he's dead yet. I can't imagine the story group and Dave Filoni bringing Thrawn back into canon, only to have him be in small amounts of Star Wars Rebel episodes and then to get rid of him. So I don't think he's gone. I think...
Well, he admitted it in the Rebels Recon. He said that both Ezra and Thrawn are alive.
Oh, good. Okay. I haven't seen the last Rebels Recon yet.
Blue balls live.
Oh, good. Oh, I was going to pour one out for Thrawn, but I can wait. That's good.
Maybe you should pour one out for Pallion.
True.
You know what? I think I saw Filoni maybe tweeted something out today. I can't remember if he tweeted or I saw somewhere else in an interview, I think. I think he's alive. I think Pallion lives somehow. But I think he does.
Well, I don't really care about Pallion. I care about Thrawn, so whatever.
Hashtag justice for Pallion.
Justice for Pallion. But yeah, that's my thoughts on it. I like it in the sense that, you know, it is a TV series geared towards kids. And so I think that there was a lot of how it tied up was really good in that regards. I'm just curious to see what other plans Star Wars has as far as Thrawn, and, you know, is Ezra going to help with the resistance that is going to come against the First Order? I don't know. I have a lot more questions than answers, but I think that was Filoni's intention. So,
and he's opened it up for about 800 stories that I'm sure all of us would love to see. That's the one thing.
I mean,
he found a way to wrap it up, wrap up this specific story in little bows, but also give us 800 questions we need answered. So give
true.
Me all the books, give me all of the TV series, give me comics, just please, like now. I need to know.
Yes. Yes. And I think that's the beauty of Star Wars is I approach Star Wars with, you know, I should have more questions than answers because there's a lot of mystery surrounding it. And I liked that Filoni answered some questions about the Force, but not all questions. You know, when with World Between Worlds, when you see that, oh, you can pull people out of time, you can change events. It didn't answer all of our questions, but it was able to give us an idea of, oh, this is what Darth Sidious was talking about. This is sort of the idea that he had in mind when he was recruiting Anakin. And so that kind of like sets in the back of our mind. I also like that these types of stories, whether they are in TV shows or books or comics, I really like that if you are a Star Wars fan who's just focused on the movies and that's all you care about, I really like that you don't need this type of information to still enjoy the Star Wars films. So, I mean, I am of the belief that you should absorb everything that has the name Star Wars on it. I say that as I'm really behind on my Star Wars reading. But I really like that you don't have to watch this in order to still enjoy, you know, A New Hope or even, you know, The Force Awakens and The Last Jedi. So I thought Filoni did a really good job with that as well.
Absolutely. I'm with you there.
Yes.
I just felt like, yeah, I really liked the whole thing, basically, like, I was one of those people that were like, oh yeah, I want it to be more about the rebellion. But the more you think about it, it was about the rebellion. Like, even though there's Force episodes and stuff. And I feel like season 4 did a much better job at it than season 2 or 3. Like, I feel like the first and fourth seasons were really good at sort of having that balance. But like, if you look at the sort of, I feel like, I don't know about you guys, but do you remember when Rebels was first announced?
Yes, I do remember that.
See, I feel like the marketing for it was a disservice. Like, even though the marketing was cool, I feel like the original sort of sell of the show was that it's going to be how the rebellion's formed. And I feel like it's only true to the extent. It was more of a POV of a certain rebel cell. And I feel like if they explained the rebel cells, it would have been a better idea. I know that the whole concept of the first season was that they didn't know. But, you know, for audiences, it would have been a bit more easier to understand that this wasn't exactly like the A to Z of where Mothma got on board and stuff. You weren't going to see Admiral Ackbar like get his groceries, which would be a great show.
Yes, I totally watched that.
Cooking with Ackbar.
yes.
Because he did chef.
Oh my god. Perfect.
I love it.
But no, it's like, yeah, but the epilogue ends up with so many story possibilities that I'm so excited by it. Like the whole Sabine and Ahsoka angle. I think it's really cool that she gets to be 40 years old. I just love the idea that this is a character that captured everyone's heart. And everyone used to say, oh, Ahsoka's really cool. It's a shame they're going to kill her off because she can't be past episode 3. And here she is. She outlived Vader and the Emperor.
That's Obi-Wan. A good point.
She outlived everyone. And I feel like that's such a cool part of that character. It's like, there's so much storytelling there. Like, someone the other day, like, everyone kept saying on the live chat, do you think that Ahsoka will talk to Luke or Leia? And I was like, that's pretty cool. But technically, she could talk to both Anakin and Obi-Wan. As a Force ghost.
Ooh, I wonder if, imagine, like, Anakin, like, appeared to her as a Force ghost and was like, hey, sorry for being a dick. I'm cool
My
now.
Bad.
My bad. And then Obi-Wan's like, hey, Ahsoka, you're right. The Jedi pretty much suck ass. We're trying to fix it. Sorry. And then Ahsoka was like, Ahsoka was like, I know.
He's gone somewhere.
I was right this whole time because I am a woman. Yeah. And women are always right.
But in another episode of Claire crying over things, just thinking about that conversation that Ahsoka could have with Anakin at this point, it just makes me a little misty-eyed, like even thinking of the possibilities, like, oh my god. Ugh.
And it's like, you knew the kids in the temple, they were asking for it, really.
Oh. And Ahsoka's like, yeah, you're not wrong. I agree.
Master Skywalker, what are we gonna do? I bet afterwards he like tried to pants Anakin. Anakin's like, you little shit.
Anakin's like, oh, I hate these guys so much.
Little kids could turn into force ghosts, that poor Vader, he'd have a rough time.
Yike. That'd be kind of funny, though.
A mob of children.
Oh, God. Luckily, they can't, though, and they're just gone for it for part of the Force.
They're
now.
Just gone from anyway. Existence. Just a blip in our universe.
Well, they go back into the Force, and they're probably like, you know, like they're probably like a tree or a turd or something.
They've been brought their back as poopsicles.
There you go.
Oh, yes, we're talking about poop again.
Of course.
Is there anything else to talk about, really?
Speaking of poop, what were your thoughts of Governor Price deciding to go down with her ship instead of going and joining the rebels?
Go down with this. Yeah,
it was the ship.
I'm sorry.
I was like, okay, goodbye. The price was not right. That's all I'm saying.
Oh my gosh.
She failed. She failed again. I was like, oh, come on, you're better than this. And then she got scared by a wolf. I was like, come off it. Do you know what? Just stay in there. But, you know, fair's fair. She stayed
in there. Because I'm kind of a sick person, and I just don't like Price, any single thing about her. I was a little disappointed that she wasn't ripped to shred by those Loth wolves.
You know, I had a serious Annihilation moment. Have you guys seen Annihilation yet?
Yes.
I have not.
Oh my gosh. Because I was thinking about that wolf bear thing from Annihilation.
Ooh.
And I was thinking, oh man, like what if Governor Price was just ripped to shreds like right now?
Oh, beautiful.
But anyway, that's just morbid thinking on mine and Claire's part. Sorry, Charlie.
For a Y7 children's show.
I heard the words, what if Admiral Price was ripped? And all I can think about is like using steroids and stuff, like working.
Well, if you read the song book, you'd know that she did go to the gym. She was training with some bodyguards. So she probably is pretty jacked under that Imperial uniform.
And the bad haircut.
Oh, God, yeah.
When did Thrawn come out again, the book?
I think it comes out in April.
No, the original one.
Oh.
When did that come out?
When did it come out? It came out in like July of last year, I think.
Okay, so it's been what? How many months is that?
I'm bad at math.
Whatever month that is, that's how many months I still haven't read for.
Hey, it's okay. I'm really behind on my Star Wars reading. Like, okay, Star Wars confessional time. You guys ready?
I'll forgive you, whatever it is.
I haven't even read Lost Stars yet.
Okay, well this was fun.
Kristen is being replaced.
Oh, I'm eating my
Stand
words.
Stand by.
Go and read that book. It's very good.
I know. It's phenomenal, and I love it, but I just haven't read it yet. I have it sitting on my shelf, but I keep buying more books, and it's this battle I have with myself. Like, I'll go into Half Price Books, or I'll go to Barnes & Noble, and I'll be like, it's that meme of looking at myself in the mirror saying, you will not buy any more books. But I just keep coming out with books. That's a problem. It's an addiction.
It is a problem. You have to see someone about that.
I do. Or I have to finish reading a book. Guys, I'm
literally
reading. This isn't a podcast.
This
like,
is an intervention, Kristen.
Damn it, I knew this day would happen. I haven't even finished a book yet. I'm in the middle of reading like four different books, and I haven't even finished one of them.
you need help. Luckily, I bought you a book.
Damn it! No! Not again! Speaking of addictions, what were your thoughts on Zeb showing Hot Callus his homeworld and showing that his people were okay and that they were going to accept Hot Callus, as their own? And do you think Zeb and Hot Callus are a couple?
Yes, they're banging.
Yes.
They're together. They love each other. That's it. That's all I'm accepting.
They're going to adopt little Lasat, and I would love that.
Oh, that's so cute.
Well, my actual thought process during the premiere, of the finale, that was kind of weird, but my actual thought process was, oh God, I'm crying again. Oh God, where are the tissues? Oh God, this is not good at all. That was basically my thought process when I watched it for the first time. So beautiful. It was just, that was probably my favorite part of the epilogue since that episode of Callus and Zeb just, you know, spooning in the snow on the ice moon. That's one of my favorite episodes of Rebels, and you gotta love Hot Callus, and I'm just really happy that he found that peace of mind and acceptance somewhere. So we love you, baby.
I have to say, as a straight individual, Hot Callus wearing that Imperial outfit.
Oh my gosh.
That was peak Hot Callus.
Hot Callus. Retweet, pin, share. Yes.
Tattoo it on my body.
Even though...
Yes.
Even though Rook was like being burnt alive, I feel like Zeb was literally sweating over the Hot Callus look.
Oh, yeah. Like,
damn.
Like, he was shooketh. As was I. As was I.
Zeb wasn't actually being brave for the team. He was just trying to impress Hot Callus because he was so hot.
Yeah.
Of course he was.
That's true. What were your favorite things about the Rebels series finale? I didn't get to hear sort of what you guys discussed with the live podcast, but what were some of your favorite highlights from the final two episodes of Rebels?
Oh.
Go first, Claire.
Some of my favorite things. I really loved the sequence with the Loth wolves, except for the really cheesy, hey, wolf, look, it's a bunch of wolf pack. Ha ha ha. Whatever. Not that wasn't my favorite, but just watching the wolves be ferocious and adorable and terrifying and try to rip Price apart was just, well, at least threatened to. It was so satisfying. Something I didn't expect to love so much, Purgil coming into the finale. I just, oh my God. And the fact that Ezra and Thrawn ended up being shot into who knows where together. If you had told me that at the beginning of Rebels, that Ezra was going to have this ending with the beautiful, wonderful, magnificent Thrawn, I would probably be disgusted by it. But at the end of the day, they have a lot more in common than I had originally thought. And the more that I think about it, Ezra and Thrawn are a really interesting pair to go off into space together, because I mentioned this on the live podcast earlier this week. Thrawn and Ezra have more in common than they think, especially since Thrawn just wants to protect the Chiss at all costs, even if he has to fight for the Empire. But he will do anything to protect his people and send the best people out to the Chiss Ascendancy to protect them from this looming threat that's coming. He understands that Ezra will do anything to protect Lothal. And that's how he knows his weakness to get him onto his ship. So I think it's just fair that two people who would do anything for their people, getting shot into space together to become space buds and protect the Chiss Ascendancy, I hope.
I would love that. Right? Well, it's kind of interesting with Thrawn, because this next book that's coming out, like on the cover, it's Thrawn and Darth Vader. So I don't really know what to expect with this next novel that Timothy Zahn is working on. Like, does Thrawn stay out in the Outer Rim this entire time, or does he escape and do him and Darth Vader sort of work behind the scenes to try and prevent dangers from the Outer Rim coming into the Empire? I don't think this will happen, but I've heard a lot of people talking about how maybe this will be a good introduction for the, I'm going to butcher their name, but I don't care because I don't like them anyways. If this is going to be an introduction to the Uzong Vong. I know. Everybody,
You pronounce it Klingon.
Oh, yeah, I like that. but I'm curious to see if, like, with Thrawn going into the Outer Rim, if he's going to discover some new threats that are going to be happening and he has to contact Vader or the Empire and say, hey guys, not looking good over here. What you gonna do about it? Or something. I'm just curious to see if Thrawn and Vader are going to be interacting in this new novel. How are they going to do it in a way that makes sense with the Rebels series finale?
Well, I feel like if you look at the front cover, Vader's got the lightsaber that we see in the comics that isn't fully formed yet. So I don't know if that's like, I think it got destroyed recently, so it's like quite early on. And the whole point of the Vader comic is that Palpatine's testing him, like literally like trying to murder him. And I haven't read Thrawn, the first novel, but I assume it's pretty early on in his career at the same time. So maybe it's Palpatine testing both of them at the same time, like against each other. And, like, you know what Palpatine's like. He's like, it's all about loyalty and sort of picking people off against each other.
Palpatine's just a weird dude. I don't understand him. I don't get him.
So when you asked, like, what my favorite, like, sort of moments in the episode were, the whole Palpatine segment just blew my mind.
Oh.
Just particularly, like, seeing, like, because we never see, like, the nice, kind Chancellor Palpatine in the OT era. So to see what he would have looked like, the white and the gold robes, and you know, like the lovely old grandpa look, and the way he just, like, we said this before on the live show, like, any actor that does Emperor Palpatine, you have to be very sort of careful how you do it. Like, no one gets it fully spot on like Ian McDiarmid, obviously, because he is the Emperor. Sam Witwer gets very, very close, and I love his performance, but there's a slight bit of humor and there's a slight bit of there's like in there, like there's more to it than just cackling and being evil. And the whole kind old man stuff just was just awesome. But then you see like the darkness in him, and a lot of it was like the lighting in that episode was just amazing. The flash between the white robes and the dark
horrifying
imperial outfit, so cool, right? So yeah, I always love that sort of stuff. And just hearing, by the way, hearing Ian McDiarmid say the words Grand Admiral.
That was really cool.
Nice.
That was really cool.
I have to say, the other thing I loved as well was like, 'cause the music was just amazing. Like, Kevin Kiner, give him all the projects. Him and I can't remember the name of the dude that does the music for Battlefront 2 and Battlefront. Those two guys are the best at doing like Star Wars music. Which I feel like you have to be very, very careful of how you do it. But there's a moment in this episode where, like, I didn't realize how emotionally attached I was to these characters. And I feel like the biggest character that I loved the most in the show was actually Lafaw itself. Because we see it grow and we get attached to it. And the moment where Thrawn starts attacking the planet with the orbital strike, that by itself was like sort of devastating, but the music choice they used, which was the bit where Palpatine's electrocuting Luke.
Yes.
Oh yeah.
Cool little, like, it really sort of made me feel really emotional, because that music I always associate with the best scene in Star Wars, which is where Vader turns good. So it was like double whammy. It was like a perfect choice of music, and also it was horrifying. Like, Thrawn didn't give a shit. Those people are dying.
Yep.
especially there's a, I always make, I don't make fun of because I understand why they do it. Like, you know, like they save money on sort of the character models. Like every Imperial, you can't see their face. They've got the hat right down their head. There's a character model that they always use, which is basically Minister Tua, but they swap the colours around. And she's just like looking up, like, maybe it's the ghost of Minister Tua. Rest in peace. Bless her soul. Or maybe it's like a twin sister or something, like Janet Tua.
Such a simple name, Janet. I liked, there was one part in the finale where Ezra was looking at pictures of his parents and he was saying, I will finish what you started. And it just reminded me so much of sort of like the stark contrast of that, where Ben Solo is looking towards Darth Vader's mask and saying, you know, I will finish what you started. And it was so interesting seeing two people who are both, you know, Force users, and who have family ties to very influential moments throughout Star Wars, how they're using their powers in the exact opposite ways, where Ezra is honoring his family by standing with Lothal and defending Lothal and the people of Lothal and making sure that, you know, the Empire can't hurt them. And the planet is able to flourish because of it. And Ezra is able to flourish because of it. And the people around him, like his people who he's, the ghost crew who he's come to claim as his family, they have benefited from it. Whereas you have Ben Solo, who's trying to finish Darth Vader's and Darth Sidious's sort of reign of the Empire. Like, everybody else is suffering around him. You know, General Leia is suffering because of it. His dad, Han Solo, is suffering from it. He did. Even, you know, Rey suffered from it. And even people in the First Order are suffering around him. You have my sweet baby boy, General Hux, who is suffering. So it's very interesting to see, you know, the similarity, like the parallel, where Ezra's purpose is very uplifting and there's a lot of growth and everybody around him benefits from it. Even the rebellion as a whole benefits from it. And then you have characters like Ben Solo, who's fulfilling somebody else's purpose and it's literally sucking the life out of the galaxy. So that was very interesting to see.
Yeah, you made a really good point. Like, I know a lot of people hate Ezra, but both Ben and Ezra at the same, like, both are sort of whiny, but you actually do see Ezra's character growth, and there's something really beautiful. And I anyone who says that they hate him, look at Lothal in that final epilogue moment. Look how beautiful it is. Mm-hmm. That's all because of that sacrifice he made. And then look at Ben. Look at everything he does. Like you said, like, all you see is destruction and sort of misery and fire. And it's just, yeah, it's an interesting concept. Like, especially considering there's all these rumors about the fate of Jason Syndulla. Is he part of Ben's camp? Like, I feel like stupid anyway. But
I have no idea what they're going to do with Jason Syndulla. Like, is he going to be trained by Luke, or is Hera going to keep him around and, you know, have him learn how to be a really good pilot and sort of have him help out with the resistance? Or are they not going to join the resistance? Or are they going to go off and do their own thing because they've already did their time with the rebellion? Like, I have no idea what they're going to do with Jason or how they're going to sort of introduce him into the story, if that's something they even want to do.
I hope that is the case. Just thinking about Cham Syndulla and all of his time he put into the fight, and Hera Syndulla, and how much time and emotion and blood, sweat, and tears, for lack of a better phrase, she put into the rebellion. I hope she gets a break, really.
Girl a vacation.
Man, she just needs a little peace.
Just a nice makeup set.
And I did a fun little experiment today because I had some free time, and I decided to watch the season one premiere of Rebels. And then after that finished, I watched the finale.
Mm-hmm. Ooh, that's a good idea.
And it was so fun, just because we were talking a little bit earlier about Ezra. There was a quote in the series premiere once the rebels start taking him in. And he said, "I'm all for sticking it to the Empire, but there's no way I'd ever stick my neck out this far."
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
And then in this finale, he shot himself into space with Thrawn to possibly never be seen again. Just thinking about Ezra's growth and Kallus's growth as well, watching him hunt them down all through that original episode and enslave Wookiees and, oh, man. This show has gone a lot farther than I expected it to, and I'm really pleased with all of the character growth I've seen. And
you know, there is a lesson to be learned with Kallus's character growth, and it's this. Everybody out there listening, get ready, because here it comes. When you defect from the Empire, you grow substantially hotter. It is known.
You do realize you're saying this on the Imperial Senate podcast. I think we've got an issue here.
Listen, the facts, I can't dispute the facts. I mean, as much as I want to say, hey, you become hotter if you join the Empire, it's just not true. Like, you have Kallus that did his thing, and you've had other people that have done their thing. And, I mean, you know, once you are freely able to be yourself and join the rebellion and subconsciously know that you're fighting for good, you grow so much hotter. Like, the physical traits are just amazing. Like Star Wars Episode 9, whenever General Hux defects from the First Order, he is going to have a glow up, and I am here for it. I cannot wait.
Those dark circles are going to instantly disappear.
A thing of the past. He's going to get some moisturizer on him. Boom. Brand new.
Guys, fascists aren't sexy.
What? My mind has been blown.
I have to say, like, a brief interlude. I just remembered, you're talking about the whole sequence where Ezra talks to the portrait of his mum and dad. One cool thing I noticed was that the sequence with Palpatine, the bit where they're reaching out, that's actually the sequence that he sees in earlier seasons, like when he has like dreams of his parents. That's the exact same shot that Daniel from Lucasfilm, who listens to our podcast, hey Daniel,
pointed out to
me. Oh shit!
Like I watched the episode like 5 times that day. And I still didn't notice this, which is that in that sequence, Hera rubs her belly.
What the hell?
She touches her belly. And I was like,
oh my god.
God damn it.
When does she do that?
At the beginning
of the finale. It's real brief. But she does.
Dang it. She doesn't say, hey guys, I'm Preggers.
Yeah, she doesn't like vomit.
Can you imagine? It's everywhere.
Like, vomits all over like Kallus. God damn it.
He'd still be
Kallus
is
like, that's my fetish. Anyways.
God. Carrot chunks his hair.
Gross.
Ew.
Well, that's all the time we have. yeah, I think that's it for like our discussion for Rebels. I don't think anything else newsworthy has happened in the Star Wars realm. So if you're listening to this and you're ready to sort of say goodbye to Star Wars Rebels, go ahead and pour one out for all the lives we've lost. And hope for, you know, a new series that could probably answer all these questions, or maybe not even a new series, just a constant speculation that'll wake you up at 3 o'clock in the morning in a desperate sweat of, oh no, what's going to happen to Jason Syndulla? And then you can't go back to sleep that night.
That's usually how it goes for me. Yeah. Just about.
Yep.
I'm still crying over everything. Like, you know, same. We didn't even talk about the tentacles. How sexy was that?
There's always tentacles in Star Wars. Like, I never really thought about that until somebody had mentioned it, and until I saw the new Han Solo trailer the very end. There was freaking tentacles, and I was like, oh no, tentacles is Star Wars. You can't have Star Wars without tentacles.
You know, before that Solo trailer dropped, I actually made a joke that we're going to get Space Squid. And yes. Lo and behold, I'm a genius. So you're welcome.
You're prophetic.
Yeah, so, I get that a lot.
My whole feeling around it was like, so TFA came out, the Wrath test was like, oh, that's a bit cheesy, but, you know, it's Star Wars. Rogue One, you know, what we get, the sexy sequence with Borgullet. Okay. There's
50 Shades of Borgullet.
There's something going on here. He was getting hot for that body.
Mm.
Mm. Mm-hmm.
But then
preaching to the choir.
Last Jedi came out. There was no tentacles. So I was like, have they learned?
Boycott Disney.
And then the trailer came out. I was like,
what does Rian Johnson have against tentacles?
Do you know what? I like it. They're just trolling with us. It's pretty cool. I you know. And then this happened, so I'm cool with it. I feel like
I'm cool. I'm here for tentacles. I am here for tentacles. If you want to send us your tentacle porn or get in touch with us, you can find us on Twitter at ImpSenatePod, or you can send us a message on our Facebook page, The Imperial Senate Podcast. If you're listening to this, tweet out your Star Wars tentacle porn fan art. Tweet it to us using the hashtag Star Wars Experience. Star Wars Show Experience. So that's all the time that we have now. You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at Kristen K. Bates. Charlie, where can people find you?
You can find me on Twitter at CMWASHBY, where I tweet about tentacle porn. I also have an Instagram where you can just search Charlie MW Ashby, and I don't know what I do. Just post stuff on there. And that's basically it.
You have a Twin Peaks podcast that you host, right?
I do have
a
Twin Peaks podcast that I host, but we aren't doing any episodes at the moment. We'll be back soon. I'm also setting up another podcast, which I'll talk about at some point on the show in the future.
Nice. I am about to start watching Twin Peaks for the first time, so probably start. Yeah, I've never seen Twin Peaks before.
You have to
either, Charlie. Don't hate me.
Well, I'll tell you what, guys. When we come back on our Twin Peaks podcast, we're going to be starting from the beginning again and going through each episode as a retrospective view. But I guess you could listen to our run. We do like a sort of overview. So once you finish both season one and two, listen to that first episode because it's pretty fun.
Okay, I'm going to do that. Yeah, Claire, where can we find you?
You can find me on Twitter and Instagram at cstribs, such as C-S-T-R-I-B-S. And in the near future, shrouded in all of this mystery, you might catch me on the Imperial Senate podcast Patreon page.
Ooh, shit, what up? Sneaky. Yes, we do have a Patreon page. We also have merchandise on TeePublic. Charlie makes like really funny shirts, so you should buy some of them. You can even find all of us on the Facebook page for Star Wars Podcast Alliance. It has the Imperial Senate podcast along with Still Wars and a bunch of other Star Wars podcasts that we love to listen to. Our other host, who is really sick, you can find him on Twitter at Naquicious. That's NAQUICIOUS. I don't know. Does he have an Instagram?
He does. I think it might be the same.
Okay. Who knows? We'll figure it out. So that's where you can find us. And that's all the time that we have.
That's all, folks.
All right. Send us your tentacle porn. And don't forget to have a regular bowel movement.
Please.
All very important.
Okay, bye.
See ya.
Bye.
Dissolve the council permanently.